This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th. U.S. only. See store online for details.
Welcome to the Michigan Wild Podcast.
We're just here walking around. We're going to go set a tree stand. Don't worry, my dad's weird. He never shot a huge buck.
I just shot a freaking big buck.
Get him. Go get that one, Henry. Right here.
Ooh. Size of that deer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Michigan Wild. This is take 2 for this week's intro. I screwed it up, but you know what happens. I'm not perfect, and I try to do these things just off the cuff, as real as I can, but yeah, that didn't work this week. All right, well, this week's episode is a good one. It was with Davin and Brad from Half Ass Hunting. Davin had reached out to me. Oh, shoot. When was it? It was a few weeks. It was actually the week of the Big Woods episode. I did with Hunter Sparks. We had talked a little bit about the water flipping. Is it a myth? And he reached out to me and said, no, dude, it's not a myth, man. We hunt, we do a lot of fishing on the piers and love targeting fish, and the water flips when we really have, you know, good luck and good success. I was like, all right, we're doing an episode. Let's talk about it. So him and Brad got on. It was a good episode talking all about that. I learned a lot, and essentially I came away with the reason for it is similar to the same kind of, I'd use it whitetail terms, right? Like, I love hunting cold fronts. I love playing off the cold fronts, and the water flipping is essentially the cold front for, you know, for that. So it was a good episode. Make sure you guys check out their podcast. They have a good group of guys. Good stuff. They're passionate outdoorsmen and love being out in the woods and out chasing fish, chasing deer, doing all those things. So it's good. It's good stuff. Appreciate the episode, guys. It was a lot of fun. Hopefully some people learn like I learned, because there's a whole other world of that stuff that I'm just never grew up doing, don't know much about it, but I love hearing the passion and the cool stories, and that's why I do this, man. It's fun. But for this week's current events, I am going to keep doing this for the next few weeks. I try to keep everyone up to date. You know, I have maybe sometimes a little longer intro. However, now that season's going to be coming here pretty quick, I am going to do the last 7 days again. I talked about this a few weeks ago. So that is essentially, I did that last year. I had some weeks I had two episodes. You know, I'd have like a Monday episode, then I'd have like a Thursday-ish episode, and that Thursday episode was the last 7 days, week one, week two, etc. And that just kind of went over how the hunting has been, maybe having a guy on who had success, or maybe having a guy on who was struggling, whoever I knew, and just kind of talked about the previous 7 days and then what we were kind of wanting to do moving forward for the next 7 days. So that those episodes are a little shorter, but they'll be very current, up-to-date stuff. So I'm going to keep my, you know, intros a little shorter for the normal podcast, and then do, you know, kind of deep dive into those other things for the last 7 days episodes. So hopefully I can do two every week. I don't even remember how many I did last year, but I'm banking up some episodes with the guys to have those to launch on the Mondays, and then, yeah, we'll have to do real-time stuff as close as we can for the other weeks. So that'll be fun. And then also ordered hats. So anyone who's interested in some Michigan Wild hats, make sure you reach out to me. I got quite a few, not a ton. It's a big investment. You got to sit on that money until the hats are gone. But yeah, reach out to me through email or hit me up on social media, Instagram, Michigan Wild Pod. Send me a message on there. I do a pretty good job of checking those. Facebook, if you only have Facebook, you can just search my name, Nate Roosevelt, on there and send me a message also. And yeah, we'll get some hats your way. They're not here yet, but they should be in the next week or so. So that's fun. Getting ready for the fall, man. Got to rock some Michigan Wild stuff if you're out there hunting and doing your thing. And then I got my last food plot snuck in. I wasn't sure if I was going to do it or not. I ended up throwing a little inside corner plot in. Had a little bit of vitalized seed left, the carbon load. Old school way, not old school way, but, you know, poor man's way. Weed eater on the shoulder, rake, backpack, and a broadcast seeder walking through corn isn't for the faint of heart, man. It kind of sucks, but, you know, once I got back there, did some raking, did some weed eating, did some broadcasting, re-raked it, you know, get that soil contact on the seed as best as I could. It could potentially be a sweet little spot. This area, I did a little video on it that I'll probably post on Instagram at some point, but essentially, the corn's not getting chopped. It's going to get picked, so it usually stays up till like November. And some years, even throughout the season, like I think the 1 year they had it up until, shoot, the following spring maybe, or December, it was like really late. So having this little inside corner green food source up against all that corn, I feel like is going to be a really good spot, and really be a good spot that I can get to easily. Access is great. I actually have a preset there. Around my house, it's the only preset I have that I hunt. And then, you know, obviously when I'm up north, you know, farther away from home, I have a couple up there too, but I very rarely hunt those. I don't even think I've hunted any of those presets. See, I have 1, 2, 3. I think I have 3 presets up north, and I've never hunted out of any of them. And I've had them set for like 2 or 3 years. Every year, go in there and check them and make sure they're good. I got lifelines in them for like my dad goes in there, brother, brother-in-law, whatever ends up happening. But yeah, primarily I'm not a preset hunter guy. So, but this one right here is one that I do hunt and have used with success in the past. And I do like it. It's one of those spots where if I only got a little bit of time in the morning, I can hunt it quick in the morning, get out of there, don't ruin anything. Same thing at night. Find myself like, man, it's the last hour of dark. What am I going to do? I can slide in and do hunt that spot and usually see deer. I've shot some deer out of it, mostly does, and I do see some bucks, but it's not like necessarily like where I'd like, oh my gosh, I'm going to kill a giant out of this preset. But I have seen a really good deer walk right by that stand one morning. So it's a good spot. It's one of those things that's like, hey, it takes a little bit of effort. You know, you got to make sure you're good with your, you know, safety wise, make sure the straps are all good and all that stuff. But I do think that it could be to my benefit, like slide in there, smoke a doe, good to go. So hopefully that plot grows. It's a little late, but I did it, you know, first week of September. Get some, it's cold right now, getting ready for October, but it should start popping. We get some warmer weather here in a week or so. And then I did notice that a lot of acorns have dropped. So I think that's going to be good for my October hunting, because I think a lot of the deer are on acorns right now, because my mock scrapes are firing off really well. Like, I have big deer on them. I have, you know, does and little bucks. However, the bigger deer are not as consistent as the doe and bucks are on those. So to me, the mock scrapes are working great. Like, I got deer using them daily. They're putting all their scent in there. They're using licking branches. They're peeing in them. They know they're there. I have good stand locations around all of them for access. Like, you know, certain winds, I can hunt multiple different trees. So I'm really happy about that. But I think the acorns are dropping hard, because when I've been out in the woods, a little bit of scouting, I did a little bit of plot work I've done so far this year, I noticed that there was a ton of them on the ground already. And then my deer movement's been less. So on the, you know, ag portions of properties, or on the edges, or on some other little, like, you know, terrain features. And I'm thinking that's because of that. So hopefully they gobble all those up. October comes in, they got to move a little farther. I can capitalize on, you know, the beans that maybe still be up, or maybe some of these food plots I got, you know, slide in somewhere and catch a buck, you know, moving before it's dark is the goal, right? So that's cool. But like I said, mock scrapes, those things are working great. I did make a fresh mock scrape when I did this little inside corner plot, and yeah, I already have deer using it. So that's a great, great option. And then that's it, guys. That's it for this week's intro. I'll just quick give a little shout out to Find It Fred. If you guys find yourself shooting a deer early season, doe season, or youth hunt, and you don't know about the shot, I'll probably try to get Tony on here before, you know, October starts. However, he's busy and these things are going, but don't be afraid to reach out to him. Follow him on social media. I'll probably end up posting his number here on the show notes eventually. But he's one guy, so, you know, he might not be able to help everyone, but he could be the guy that could give you some advice that you may need, or can get you in contact with a guy, local guy in your area. Great resource. And then Wildlife Legends Taxidermy, anxiously await my shoulder mounts. Can't wait to see those. Matt does a great job, and he's been sending me pictures. Like, Henry's buck is done, and gosh, we can't wait to get that in the wall. And it's almost like getting me fired up for October even more, because, you know, as October's rolling, I'm going to be having some shoulder mounts that I can, you know, hang up down here in the office and just kind of reminisce on years past, and it'll be good. So if your kid gets a deer youth season and you maybe are in a position where you're like, man, I'm not sure what to do, Matt helps guys cape deer. They, you know, give great advice and all those things. They have a shop. I mean, they have a legit location you can go to and drop deer off. And I've seen him out there helping tons of people with that, caping them and doing all those things. And those early season capes, man, I've seen a lot of those mounts. Them deer are pretty when you're done. You can see all the detail. So don't be afraid to maybe make a little drive if you need to, or if you're local to the area where he's at, go check him out. Does top-notch work. Really appreciate the partnership with him. And yeah, guys, that's it for this week. Appreciate you guys all, you know, listening, giving Michigan Wild support, and don't forget to get out there this week. Thank you. Guys, welcome to another episode of Michigan Wild. I have two guys on tonight, and they're not brothers. Usually, it seems like the only time I have more than one guest at once on through the web, it's brothers. But I have David and Brad on tonight. How are you two doing?
Doing well.
Doing great.
You're sitting outside and it was hot as balls today, so you seem to be... We did this at the right time of night where it cooled down a little bit, but aren't doing too bad, are you?
No,
not at all. It's good now.
It's pretty nice out right now.
Heck yeah. Whose backyard are you guys sitting in? That looks sweet back there.
That's actually mine.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. How far can you shoot back there with your bow?
Well, we shoot here on Thursday nights, actually, when we can, when it works out throughout the summer. And there's like a diagonal back this way you can shoot about 60 from like
nice.
Shed. And then that's if you go up on the point over here and shoot down towards the woods for guns, you can get out to about 150. So
oh, perfect.
Oh yeah.
That's sweet. Nice.
Yeah, we got lucky with that.
So that's Brad that's talking. And then what's your last name so people can don't get weird on me because I don't introduce you properly. You know.
Yeah, Brad Speet.
Brad Speet, nice. Nice to meet you, mister. And then who we got over here?
As well, man.
David Morales.
Nice. And you guys are a part of a podcast, correct?
Yeah.
What's that?
It's called Half-Ass Hunting. Let me get a zoom on that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Something looks wrong on that.
You know, in this today's day and age, the deer, they're open like us, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, they can pick whatever identity they want, right?
Right.
So no, how long you guys been doing the podcast for? You guys are co-hosts, right, with that?
Yeah. We got our other buddies, Logan and Colin and Derek, a part of that. And then we've been about a year and a half now.
Year and a half.
Yeah.
Nice. That's cool. You guys really set the standard high with a title like that, you know, or a podcast like that. So anyone who's listening to this wants to check you guys out. I listened to a few episodes. It's just good down to earth guys having a good time. Real world, you know, stuff. You guys all seem like you might be a little different skill sets through the bunch of you, which makes for really good conversation. So it's good stuff.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah.
So you're here tonight because of me and Hunter Sparks had a podcast a few weeks ago, and us dum-dums were like, hey, what's the water flip thing mean? And I said something about anyone wants to reach out to me, let me know. And I had multiple people reach out. I think you were first, David. And I do appreciate that. And all it has done is just keep me more like intrigued with all this because I've had multiple guys, buddies that hear it. And they're like, yeah, of course it flips. And I'm just like, but I don't get it because the fish are so deep. Why does it matter? And you know what I mean? Like, who cares if it flips and cooler, you know, all these things. But then talking to you guys, there's a little bit that goes into it and maybe a little, a little bit parallel to like the whitetail rut probably is how I've been able to like kind of break it down. So. Yeah, I guess let's jump into the fishing stuff here. How are you guys like diehard river guys, fisher guys? Like, when did you start fishing? Maybe David, you can kind of start on that.
Yeah, I've always been interested in fishing. Started out with my grandpa. We went up north and just, you know, fish for bluegill and stuff. But once you catch enough bluegill and bass, you want a little bigger, harder challenge. So I started moving in like steelhead and mostly steelhead, but some salmon in there too. I never really had like people I knew that had boats. So I usually just fish the river, creeks, a lot of pier fishing. That's probably the majority I do pier fishing for sure. If I was to pick a top fish to catch, it'd be steelhead or salmon.
Nice.
Off the pier.
Oh, yeah.
Off the pier. And now I see guys fishing off the pier quite a bit, but it seems like a lot of times they're catching like sheephead or.
Right.
Those kind of fish, I'm drawing a blank on some other names, maybe a carp here, there, suckers or something like that. But they seem to have a lot of fun just doing that on the pier. Like some of those sheephead are huge.
Oh yeah, they rip too.
I mean, we went chrome fishing, steelhead fishing like a couple months ago. It was a lake flip too. And I think we caught between the three of us like over 40 sheephead. We had one throw out, so we just go switch turns and you know. Keep going.
Well, yeah, all we did was cycle one rod. We'd catch one hand to the next guy, catch one hand to the next guy. Because we had eight bobber rods, so we had one floater, like he was saying, and one spoon just kept going.
That was the lucky spoon for the day, for sure.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Well, Brad, how's your upbringing with fishing?
My dad and my grandpa trolled, like, salmon, like, his whole life, and, like, him and my grandma did the tournaments in Holland and stuff like that. So growing up, my dad and my grandpa, we trolled like every weekend, basically in the summertime. And that's all I did really for a long time. And then we bass fished off like the dock at my grandparents and stuff. But, and then as I got older, like we just had bikes and stuff. I lived in Holland, Michigan, actually. And there's a bunch of marinas and stuff around there. So like in the summertime, we could just get up in the morning and just go, you know, bobber fish a seawall. Like I had a buddy growing up, he was very into it. And he taught me a lot, still does to this day, actually. But he would, you know, like where the bluegills were and like what to be under and all that stuff. So it's always been, it was probably my main hobby until I could really like start deer hunting. And, yeah. But that's a side note, but so then we moved south, and we were kind of right by the river, and I started doing that more with some buddies, like like Hottentots on the river in the fall, and like early spring drift. I can't really claim to be a super drift master, to be honest. I've caught a couple that way, but I don't want to go tooting that horn at all. But you know, trolling the river and plugging holes and stuff, I got into that with some buddies, and that's been a lot of fun too. So steelhead or king is still my favorite fish to catch. So
sweet. So how did you two guys meet, or how did you guys become buddies?
So my first memory of Brad.
Oh, you can't start that.
Yes, let's go.
That's a funny story. We went to the
it thing. Is, and it makes me feel bad every time.
It's funny at your expense.
Yeah.
So we went to the same school with each other. Brad's a bit older than me. So
I think is it? 6 years?
Yeah. So I'm 25. How old are you?
I just turned 31. So yeah.
Yeah.
So I was like,
we can do math, boys. We can do math.
I was like in the sixth grade. We're like passing through like gym and like lunch. And Brad's over there in the gymnasium, just like he like long shots of basketball, hits me right in the nards.
Sorry. Yeah, bad time to take a sip of water.
Oh gosh, yes, I almost spit my water out.
So I'm sitting there like, oh, you know, just in pain. And Brad is super nice. He's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I was trying to hit the hoop and
just smoke this kid that's like a sixth grader gets smoked by a kid in high school.
Right. Oh my gosh.
Oh, that's classic.
I don't even remember this either, so that's bonus there for me.
Probably because you did it so often. You know, you did it so often, you did it. Just another day in Brad's life.
Yeah.
Wrecking little kids.
I never told you that, but I meant
no. I did the same.
So that's when you guys first met. That was like love at first sight for David, apparently.
No,
yeah, he followed me.
He followed.
Other than that, though, I mean, I heard about him shooting 2 10 points back to back. I was like, dang, that's pretty sweet.
It's not a common occurrence, so
but that's a different story. But otherwise, we like reconnected.
It was pure fishing.
Pure fishing. So
okay.
Derek, one of the co-hosts, we kind of kept in touch after high school with pure fish once in a while. He's like, yeah, Brad's coming with us. I'm like, this seems familiar. Then we were out walking on the pier, and this was iceberg season.
Oh, that was a good night.
That was
a good night.
So the iceberg season, the whole pier is, I mean, those icebergs, you can be top to a lighthouse and you're fishing off it.
Really? So you guys walk out there with all those out on there?
Oh yeah. That's the funnest.
That's my
favorite. I am writing iceberg fishing down. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, I honestly look back at those pictures frequently. Like it was a spectacular sunset.
Yep.
Super orange, a bunch of ice and water, and we catch like 4 cohos and a steely.
We caught
at least a couple catfish.
Couple catfish.
You don't want those while you're out there because they're just wasting bait.
I would say I caught a decent hen steelhead.
So 2 chrome.
2 chrome, because you caught a chrome too.
Yeah, I caught a nice buck that night. Beautiful fish.
Yeah.
So, like, how treacherous are we talking with these icebergs? Like, I know, like, some of the piers I've worked on, you know, Lake Michigan, and seen the ice in the wintertime, and I've seen what it looks like out there. And I'm like, you said that. I'm like, there's really, you guys go way out there on that? So, like, obviously, you got a guy to test the bound, test the bergs a little bit here. But so, I mean, how common can you guys do that?
It hasn't been cold enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
What was this, 4 years ago, 5 years ago?
Yeah, I'd say 4 years ago.
Okay. And then that time there was a solid piece of ice, like front to back, and that was like a good 8 to 10 feet tall or so.
Yeah.
That makes it a little safer because then you're kind of still dealing with the same amount of space.
Yeah.
But then, like, as it melts, or if it, like, if the waves are hitting it right, it kind of makes it like a ramp coming down, which then it gets a little hairy. But usually you got a little bit of pier. Yeah. A little bit of the concrete still right there.
Yeah, sometimes that water's washing up on the edges where you can kind of climb down to the edge if you got to net something.
Okay. But
I definitely recommend, like, because sometimes those waves will go over, like, some of these piers in Michigan, they got rocky start, then it's concrete. Mm-hmm. Those rocks will just be glass ice, and every step you take, you're falling. Pearson. And yeah, you'll get pier shin like Brad.
I was pitched here one time. I couldn't feel my, like, lower half of my left for, like, the whole morning.
So you want ice cleats. If it's like, always bring them just in case you need them. For sure.
Yep. Now, you are, like, I'm just thinking of the logistics of catching a fish through all that. Obviously, you're hitting, like, I mean, there's not, it's open water you're casting into or whatever you're doing, correct? Like, is this like pockets of open water, or is it pretty open out there? Like, you just rip one out there, or is it kind of like, here's our little spot we got to hit? Because if a fish bites and runs, it's going to go underneath more ice or take. I mean, I guess I'm just trying to think logistically how the heck you maneuver around that.
It depends, though. I mean, depending on what pier you're on, some piers are just channels. There's no current. Some piers, you got a river going through the two pier heads. So if there's a current, that ice isn't going to form, which I've seen where it's cold enough where the river has, like, sheet ice going across and you can't cast because you're lying and you drug that ice. But, I mean, I had it one time, for instance, I saw the pier. I'm like, I can't see the channel. This one was a river. And I'm like, I'm just going to send it, stick to the plan. So I get out there, and the whole river's frozen besides, like, a 100-yard opening. Oh,
I remember this, too.
I got this on video. I'm with this story. But so I'm like, I'm just going to try to cast right in the middle of that. And from that opening to the pier wall, it was, like, 20 foot of sheet ice. So I'm like, well, if I catch something, I have to flip it over that.
Yeah.
The pier is about, you know, you're high up. You're not touching concrete because of the ice. So it was close to sunset. One of my rods going off. I'm like, oh, crap. I actually have to do this. So I pre-planned. I had a rope tied to my net already. So I'm like, all right, if something happens. So it's a coho splashing on the surface. And you got spring cohos in the wintertime. They're not as big. They're not going up to spawn. They're just there to feed.
Yep.
So I hook into him. He's at the edge of the ice. So I kind of flip him up over top. So now he's flopping on that sheet. So I'm dragging him across that sheet. And I got one arm with a phone videoing this because I'm like, nobody's going to believe me.
Heaven's no.
I'll send it to you later to see. But yeah, so then I lower down the rope with the net and I flop him in the net and pull him up. And he's probably one of my bigger cohos I caught out in the winter. He's about the length of a pizza box.
Dang, so you're telling me you netted a fish on ice?
Yes.
The fish is flopping on ice. And you... Oh, my gosh. You are just, like, blowing my mind right now with, like, opportunities I've never even thought were possible.
Yeah.
Like, I could get on with that kind of ice fishing. That seems a lot more interesting than sitting over a hole, you know, freezing my butt off. At least you're, like, treacherous journey to get out there. Good story, you know. Yeah. Wow, that's cool. I'll definitely see that video. But I do want to back up just a little bit because, like, hearing you guys talk about, like, where your friendship started through fishing. I mean, that's some of my good friends now as an adult. That same kind of concept, right? Like, guys rekindling from, you know, either being high school buddies and in the small game woods or the deer woods, whatever may that be. And you never know when that, you know, friendship can come up. And dude, I cherish those. Like, those are my homies now, right? You know, and that's really cool that that same concept with the fishing. And then I kind of wanted to, so is it like the pier guys versus the charter fishing guys? You guys kind of like your own little community because you're the pier fishers. Will you watch all those big boats go by or what?
Sometimes. I mean,
I mean, there's a chip on your shoulder to like succeed. Yeah. Well, you know, they're going out, you know, a mile and a half, 2 miles. I don't feel like there's actual like any animosity, like really. Right. But yeah, in my mind, I'm like, that's right. We don't got to do that. Like,
we don't need a big boat. We don't need to spend all that. We're catching them right here, baby. Let's go.
Yeah. Oh,
that's cool. So do you see like, is there like, there's got to be like regulars, right? Like, I mean, I'm kind of assuming like the Sixth Street Dam, or I think that's the spot in Grand Rapids, right? Where everyone goes. It's like everyone kind of knows everyone. They kind of, you know, come and go. Granted, they get flooded with a lot of people certain times of the year, but it's kind of like they all got their buddies and it's like, how you doing? You know, it kind of feels like it's like golfing. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Oh, hey, there's so-and-so, you know, is that kind of like how the peers are too? You kind of get to know everyone.
Yeah. I mean,
that's it.
I'd say so, because there's some guys you see out there. Like, I've been fishing piers since I was like middle school, and there's like old guys on there that they're really nice. You know, they tell you old secrets and stuff and how to fish. And you see them out there when you're older, and they're like, they're out there in their 70s going out on the ice, and they're like, dang, you guys are hardcore.
Yeah.
And it's the same guys too. I mean, it definitely is. You recognize faces. You may not know their names until they say it, but definitely good guys out there.
Sweet. So now where does this like pier fishing turn into river fishing? Like, I'm a noob here. So like, is like pier fishing a summertime activity? Well, and then once the fish, I guess this kind of lead us into the whole lake flip thing, but like you kind of target them at the pier first. And then once they come through, that's when you start hitting them in the river. Correct.
Kind of like, or like if you want to go one, like side note of like a walleye, maybe. I'm not good at this. I just know I have buddies that are really good at it. And they say, it's like every time the lake flips and like, if we're heading to the pier, there's boats going to catch walleyes. So it can be same time. Like you can be fishing them on the pier. Same for steelhead. You can be fishing them on the pier and guys are catching them in the river. It's a matter of, just how fast that push really happened or how many fish do what they're going to do. Cause it's I don't know. I guess I can't really put a name or a specific time frame unless you go to like fall and spring. Then it's obviously more river versus the pier. But in the summertime, that flip will make both almost simultaneously a good place to be.
Gotcha. So now we'll kind of break down what the water flip is in the best way you guys can. Maybe whoever wants to tack that one first.
The way I understand it, and Brad chip in if I'm saying it wrong. So like, okay. Depending on what lakeshore you're on. So we're more western side. So we need an east wind for a lake flip, east to northeast. It depends on the shoreline. So
if you're on a little kick or like just like a, yeah, I mean, obviously it's not a perfect line. So if you have a little bit of that north bend to your coat, like shore or coast or whatever you want to like right there, a northeast is going to push your specific spot a little different than a dead east on a more flat facer.
Yeah. So pretty much that wind is pushing that hot water that's close to shore. So if you're fishing piers or inshore, it's going to push that hot water out and basically replace it with the colder, deeper water. So if you're going for a trout, salmon, or cold water species, they prefer like that 45 to like maybe mid 60s, low 60s water temp.
Right.
So in the summertime, when the water, when you know the lake, Great Lakes around here, they're like bath water. Catch them close. So yeah,
then it's like for thermal climb, you look like you target those silverfish deeper. Like even if you're in 150 feet of water. That first spot, there's like that, like as soon as it goes from like 70, 60, and then it'll be like high 50s or like low 60s, and then there's that big drop. And then that kind of section is where that silverfish is, because that's kind of where the bait's going to be, which is what affects that lake flip, because the bait gets pushed towards the pier, and that's why those fish are there.
Yep.
Because the bait fish like the cold water too, so they don't really care how deep it is. They're more caring on water temp. That's make it. So that was the thing that was always hard for me to understand. It's like, okay, these fish are super deep water. Then all of a sudden, because it's a little cooler, they're miraculously going to be in shallow water. Like I guess I didn't really understand that, but that makes sense with the bait fish. I wasn't really thinking that part of it.
Right.
Right. In the summertime, it's mainly steelhead too.
Okay.
There's a straggler. There will be salmon in there. Yeah. It's just, it'd be like, this is a total guess, but it'd be like 1 out of 20 would be a salmon, and there's 20 scams in there going.
Gotcha. So the next thing we kind of talked about, I think me and David were, going back and forth. It's like, okay, when you get that flake flip paired with the right time of year, that's when like a lot of the pod, I guess, what do you call them, pods or whatever, schools of fish will come through and go up into the river because they naturally want to do that anyways, right? So like if the conditions are right, it'll be more fast and rigorous, like a rut, like a whitetail rut. It's like they're still going to do their thing. It's just like when you have good weather paired with it, it's like maybe it can be more intense, or maybe, it's not such a trickle rut. It's like speak because the weather's good. So I guess that concept would kind of make sense. Okay, that's why guys are like, oh gosh, this water's flipping, boys. Let's take advantage of high odds. So,
like, I guess with that, like if it's spawn, like in the springtime, steelhead spawn, in the fall, salmon spawn, right? So if you got a lake flip, that cool water is going to get them excited because they're going to want to stage up in front of the piers or any channel mouse they want to go spawn up into. So I think another thing too, like a lot of like east winds days, if you're in the west side here, a lot of times that brings weather too. So a lot of times there'll be like a storm front. So they like that high water with the spawn. Cause I'm no scientist, but so they need like certain flows to trigger them to go upstream. So I've seen it, like you're saying, trickling in. So like recently I drove past the river and I seen a guy with one king in a bucket. So that might have just been a little trickle.
Mm.
Once you get that big heavy rain, that big cold front, like deer hunting, a big push is going to happen. There's like with salmon and steelhead spawn, there's like you got the pre-rut basically, then you got the peak rut, then it kind of trickles down and it's done.
Because you can see it too, because there's days when you're like fishing and you can see chrome just like swimming.
Yeah.
You'll see flashes of that silver. And like, obviously, usually coincidentally, it's a great day. We go and smash them, which it doesn't happen every time, but it's like sometimes it's like you're literally like David one time. I was actually out salmon fishing with a buddy.
Yeah.
And we were getting wrecked because the waves off that east wind, once you hit about 100 feet of water, it's just a bad wind. It's not good at all because that dune will cut it. So if you're in shallow, it's pretty flat still. But yeah, as soon as you break that, it gets rough again. So we're like, screw this. We got one king and that was the goal. So we came in and Damon was just heading out. And by the time I got back to my house, he was already limited out.
Yeah.
So I literally step in the door. I look at my wife and she's like, how was it? I'm like, it was good. I'm leaving again. She's like, what? I'm like, this is one of those. This is it. Like, I got to. And she's like, and how many times have I said that and went out and maybe like either got skunked or like won and it was like pretty standard?
Yeah.
I'm like, I have to go. And so I literally just turned back around and went and hopped on someone else's boat, got out there. And we did. We freaking four-manned in like, what was it, 2 hours or less?
Yeah. So what made me call Brad was, so that park didn't open till like 8, right? So I had one fish on the deck by 8:30.
And it's like a good 2 mile walk. So, I mean, he's already.
Boom.
He literally set the rod and put it in.
Yes. You know? So I'm trying to unhook this thing. My other rod's going off. I'm like, oh, shoot. So I go run and grab that, put him on the deck. Then I'm just like, holy crap, I got bodies on the pier. So I put the two fish on the stringer, then my last rod goes off and I'm like, all right, I'm done. That was like not even an hour,
just boom boom. So that's what you guys are living for right there, those moments.
It's like shooting a deer.
Yep,
closest thing to it in summer.
Hooking into steelhead on light tackle is That's that little bit of freaking hint of like bug fever that you get to like limp your way through. That's how we talk about it all the time.
Yeah.
Scratches the itch.
Yeah. Like shooting a turkey. It's cool, but it ain't it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So like you guys, there's not like I'm sure there's like gut feelings and like, you know, just like in the whitetail woods, like, it's going to be fire. And then you maybe get disappointed. And there's some days where you're like, I told you, let's go. it's time to strike. Like right now, let's do this. So I see why that's fun, because if you just went out there and limited out every single time, like, cool. And then, I hear guys talk about going, across the state on the east side and catch walleye. It's like, oh yeah, we went and we drove, four hours or 6 hours, and we were done fishing in 45 minutes. I'm like, okay, cool. Oh, then we did it the next week. I'm like, well, like at what point is that like too easy? Right. Like if that's, I like a little challenge. Don't get me wrong. I'll take the easy times when they come. But this whole salmon, steelhead, fishing them in the river, even on the pier, it sounds like too, there's challenge involved. There's timing's got to be right. And you just got to kind of put your seat time in to, enjoy those moments when it's good.
You know what? I've never like related it to like the same functions as deer hunting.
It really is.
But that's probably why we like it the same.
That's why it's going to be a problem if I start doing it and I like it, because I'm going to be like, oh my gosh, my wife's going to be like, are you serious? Like another thing. So now is it hard? So like my buddy Tony Fellows, shout out to him. He loves fishing. He's just catches a lot of fish, but steelhead's kind of been his nemesis, right? Like he hasn't had a good luck with that landing him in the river. Is it easier to land a steelhead or like a big salmon or salmon in general, like off the pier, because you're dealing with less like obstacles or stuff? But then I'm thinking in my head, like the water's way below you, so you're having to like not only net the thing and coordinate everything right and lift. Like, I guess, is it easier on the pier or is it relatively the same challenge?
I think it's relatively the same challenge, because if you're like in the heart of the spawn, and let's say you're in a small creek and they're just there spawning, you can drift any kind of lure in front of them and they're not going to go swipe at or nothing. You basically got to floss them, which some people say,
it might be frowned upon in some parts, but if it's, obviously if you legally hook it, I don't really care what style you're using or doing. It's your preference. I don't know. It's same with the many deer hunting things and stuff like that. Nitpicking almost becomes more annoying than any little bit of disagreement about styles, I guess. Yeah. Would be,
dude, we're out here enjoying the creation. Exactly. Right?
I talked to a buddy about it today. He's like, do you think deer hunter numbers are down because of like small buck bashing or something like that? And I'm like, I don't think it benefits anything. So that's kind of what I mean too. It's like, just fish. If you're doing it legally, if you throw one away that you like foul hooked or whatever, cool. That's what we're supposed to do. Accidents happen, do things right. So
yeah,
as long as you're out there with the right purpose, you're by all means.
As long as you're not throwing a lead treble hook, you're good.
yep, you got it. But yeah, like one like this big, big as a base softball or a volleyball.
Sometimes though, like peak spawn time, like in the spring or fall for salmon steelhead, sometimes you just catch them left and right and you're done with your limit in like an hour or two. It all depends on the time. I think that more happens when they don't bite is later, because then they're up in the small streams. All they're worrying about is laying their eggs and, fertilizing and all that. So
yeah, they're not worried about bulking up or getting ready for it. They're there. It just seems like to me. So the only time I've really seen a lot of salmon in the in a river is when I did a job on the Pier Marquette, and it was a part of the Pier Marquette where it's shallow. It was deep enough that drift boats were going through, but I could see into the water like super easy, and they would just kind of like waves of people would come through. It was a fly only area, and it was I think it was catch and release too. But anyways, I got there and I was like, whoa, like there are so many salmon and they are giant. Like what is going on? And I was really like, I got there early. There was no one fishing yet. And then I just kind of watched, and the first few people came on a drift boat and they got out and like fished by this hole, I'm assuming. And I was like, just like, I'm just smiling. It's like, I'm about ready to watch these dudes catch this giant fish. Cause I just seen like 50 of them and they sat there for, I don't know. I watched for 15, 20 minutes, never caught one. And that just blew my mind. I was like, what? And so that's another thing too, right? A lot of timing, a lot of technique, a lot of stuff goes into this. Some days it feels like you can do no wrong, but then obviously like that morning they didn't catch any and I was just flabbergasted by it. I'm like, I can literally like go out there and like grab one. I feel like there's so many of them. So,
I know that small stream stuff, like if he's, you're probably looking at them, they're in like a gravel bar, right? Like the reds. So, I know if I'm in that situation, like if I'm fishing skinny water, I'll just try to find deeper holes too and just drift a bobber and an egg through it or a bead or something. I feel like a lot of those fish that are in deeper holes too, they're
lost you for a second.
Are we there?
Oh, you're back.
There we go. Sorry about that.
No, you're good.
But yeah, so if they're on the reds, they're hard to bite. Try to find a deeper hole. I feel like the fish in a deeper hole are more likely to bite because they're not like actively spawning. You know, that's what I found. I mean, I don't know if there's any science to that, but I feel like those deeper holes, if they're way up in skinny water, you have a likely chance of, you know, catching a few.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I had, you know, witnessed in regard to that. It was like, what's going on here? Like, all of a sudden, you know, the challenge of it, I was like, this is going to be easy. And nope, they were not interested. They were not. Yeah. And that could have been maybe later on, like you were saying, like they could have been close to, you know, they're like you said, they probably were spawning. That's why I saw them all, you know, in there. And me just not knowing, I'm like, oh my gosh, look at all these. I'm like sending, you know, videos to my buddies and they're all just like, yeah, like what's the big deal? I'm like, dude, I've never seen anything like this before. This is cool. Oh man. So what is the, I'm just trying to think, like I like to ask guys, like what is the ideal conditions or like if you were to be like, super excited to go fishing tomorrow, what kind of conditions do you want it to be to go catch fish on a pier?
You want to go first, Fred?
I would say I like it. I obviously it's got to be a pretty steady east wind for, you know, I think honestly it can happen in a night, even if it's like from dusk until morning. It's just a harder blow is going to push it. Obviously further, I think it would be the right word to use, because there's sometimes like it'd be a Wednesday, we're both at work, someone who's like second shift or something like that, they'll be able to catch that flip and they'll crush them in the morning, and by the time we're racing out there after work, the water's already 67 degrees. So if it's a real soft blow, it can get flipped back over just as quick as it went. So I like it. I mean, I want it to last like where we can catch them throughout the day,
couple days even.
You're right, if it's hard enough you can get it to a couple mornings, but either way, a good heavy east wind, and I like it where it's like chance of rain. I'm not probably like, I don't want it to be 80%, but if I might get sprinkled on a little bit, it's a party. Like it's probably gonna be pretty fun out there.
You gotta wear a hoodie, gotta wear pants kind of a day. Oh yeah. So what I took from that is you like a hard blow, not a soft blow.
Always.
Oh shoot, what about you, Dave? Are you in the same boat or what?
I'm in the same boat. I definitely like it cloudy. I don't want a bunch of sun. I mean, you gotta think, fish don't have eyelids.
Again, I've never thought of it that way.
Yeah, that's a good point. Dude, is that why you always catch the bass underneath the shadows?
Yep,
in the summer.
Wow.
Like, genius. That's a genius talk. I've never heard that.
But I'd say cloudy for sure. Hard east wind. I like a little chop on the water. I don't like it completely flat, but a little chop. I don't know what that is. Stirs up the water. I mean, because a lot of times you see these fish. I mean, I'm weird. I cut open the stomachs of every steel that I catch. I'd say the majority of the time they got like beetles in their gut, not big bait fish. So they follow those scum lines which that's just like, you know, you ever see those green, like they flow on the current, so the water, it's just like
yes.
sludge. The, and a lot of it's the pollen in the sun.
Yeah, yeah, all the crap just hangs out right there.
So I feel like with that little bit of the chop, it might stir up some aquatic insects. A lot of times you just find like bugs, and I don't even know what they are, but some kind of aquatic.
I've had it where I've had a steelhead with a cicada in its stomach.
Yeah.
I didn't know cicadas like the water, but I guess there's a lot of them. They could go out there.
Right. I don't know if that's like really crazy wild or what. I think I want to say it happened at least twice growing up where we'd troll those scum lines too. Like growing up, my dad would always tell me about that. And more than once caught them on high lines out trolling and cut the stomachs open growing up all the time just to see what they were eating and whatnot. And many bugs and a lot of steelhead.
And a lot of times too, those scum lines, like if they got like algae and duckweed, that's what those bait fish are eating too.
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of times you go to the bait, like if you go out in the pier, you don't see bait, but the water's cool. They're probably feeding on those scum lines too, if there's no bait there. So
they're
still
They're taking advantage of that. That makes sense.
The mud line.
That's that.
I want a good mud line too.
And the mud line is when the river or whatever is going into the lake, correct? That hard transition of clean water to dirty water. I've seen that. Water.
Yep. Yep. Any aerial photo, usually of a, especially a port that's off a river, is going to have some sort of line. But the rod's not going to get hit the most, but it's going to be a freaking tank when it gets hit. Seems to be
a
reliable thing to bet on there.
Brad, you should talk about your tank.
So, I was just going to ask that. What is considered a tank? Because I think I heard someone caught like a 30-pound fish in the Great Lakes or in Lake Michigan like a couple weeks ago.
Oh,
that's
a
king, correct?
Probably. I mean, there's probably a 30-pound steelhead out there. Yeah, steelhead, I think I've seen one in a magazine growing up or something. That's a freaking something happened.
He's a freak. He got some battery acid or something. He ate some lithium batteries or something
weird.
But so, give me a kind of a range like of steelhead. Like what's like, we can just kind of go through the list. What's a big fish or like, let's do like average fish and like, what would be like, man, that's a toad.
I can tell you the average fish. I measure all my fish too, just cause I'm curious. I'd say the average where we catch them is like 28 inches.
A lot of 28s.
That's a huge fish.
Well, it is great. I mean, that's why that's hard to nitpick, but
yeah.
And then like for a steelhead
master angler's 32,
so that's like a good one.
Mm.
Oh, what was my, it was a 36 inch, what
was it,
16.2 pounds.
Wow,
that's a whale.
But off the pier?
Yeah, on a bobber. I mean, it freaking splashed a bass fisherman on its run. It was wicked.
Yeah, that fish, I was like, Brad, you got to mount that sucker because that's like a fish of a lifetime.
In my defense, Davin goes up first year Big Woods and shoots like a freaking 112, 15-inch 8-point and didn't mount that. So we don't follow each other's good advice. That's pretty much what happened.
So on that fish, like, did you catch that? What kind of, like, are you, like, what kind of pound test line are you using? What kind of a pole are you using? Like,
I think I had braid as a main line, and it's probably 20-pound braid. And then it's a just 10-pound fluoral. I think I had to retie that morning. And he has a 10-pound fluoral, and that's the leader, which is, that's like the last 20 feet of the line. Like the backing's just for less stretch, obviously, and stuff. But
I guess my setup, like a lot of my pulls, I run, people might cringe about this, but I run like straight 10 mono for backing. Then I just use a 10-pound fluoral leader.
Okay. Which, and why are they cringing? Because it's not heavy enough or what? I don't even know what that really means.
It's not safe.
It's not safe?
No, it's just for your sanity, I guess. You're going to probably break them.
I just run straight 10 throughout the whole thing. But like a lot of guys, like Brad, he's doing it probably the better way. You want something that's not going to stretch as you're backing. It's like a fly reel. You got like...
Mm.
the threaded line that's coated with rubber. Obviously, he doesn't have that on a spinning pole, but he's got, you know, it's not going to stretch. But then his leader is floral. Floral doesn't really stretch, but
it's clear. It's so clear. That's where you get the benefit. It's durable. It's not mono. It's like a more, I don't know if this is the quality of it. It's like a more plasticky feel than more a wiry, rubbery mono feel.
Okay.
So mono's going to stretch. Floral, not so much. So if you really set the hook on it, you might just snap it. But floral is also better in the rocks, too. It's a lot brace.
You can handle. Yeah, you can handle that. Yeah.
Okay. It makes gator roll sometimes. So they'll wrap their fins and gill plate and all kinds of stuff up into your leader. So I feel like we'd lose significantly more if it was all mono stuff.
Mm. Yeah. Gotcha. So, okay, that's kind of steelhead now. Like, what's a big salmon? Like a king salmon, right? Because you got to explain that, I guess, too. Like, steelhead become, or what fishes become what kind of a thing?
Kings are kings.
Kings are, they go by many names.
Well, Chinook, that's a Chinook. Chinook it's salmon. A king salmon.
Okay.
They stay salmon their whole lives.
Okay.
Steelhead are migratory rainbow trout.
Yep.
That's what it was. Okay. Gotcha.
Yep.
So the ones we're catching in the summertime, they're called Skamania steelhead.
Or,
because I've heard that word. I'm like, what are you guys talking about?
Scams, yeah.
Scams, so, yeah.
The reason why I like steelhead a lot is you can catch them basically year round. You got the summer run, fall run, which is kind of the summer run. You got a winter run in the spring, heavy spring run.
Mm.
This is like one of the best times to steelhead fish.
Winter.
Is, right? Well, winter, I was going to say like November.
Yeah.
When I'm
that's why. Yeah. Yeah. Every time I go in the fall, it seems to be productive. I'm not saying I'm catching, you know, all six of the fish we can get or anything, but I think a good day on the river we fish is a couple fish. And that's just kind of how it shakes out. And I think they're prettier. I don't know. You can see the fall colors on the river, which, I don't know, call it what you will, but sunsets and visuals, I think that's, no matter what, I think we're all out there for a little bit of that, too, you know?
For sure. I climb a tree for the same reason, right?
Exactly. Like that's right.
Same reason. So yeah, what's a big king then for you guys, or big salmon?
I'd say if you're in a river catching them, if you catch anything over 16, you know, 20-pound range, that's a big one for me.
Oh, yeah.
But I can't imagine having a 20-pound weight at the end of my pole. You know what I mean? Like a curl, like those little 20-pounders you always curled in high school, or, you know, all that stuff. Like, I'm reeling that in through the river. Like, are you joking me? Like,
it's meat missile, too.
Yep.
Kings are freaking.
That sounds like a great title for this episode, Meat Missile. I'm writing that down. Oh, gosh.
In the big lake, though, like a 40-incher, 30-plus pounder is a big king.
Yeah, like you'll hear...
That's a hammer. 20, 25, those are big. Teens are pretty average, but you catch them around 10 a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
Then the cohos, they'll be a bit smaller than the kings. Like, they can get pretty big, but they're not going to get as big.
That's 8, 10-pound coho is a big fish.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what's your favorite one to eat, then, between the three?
I'd say spring cohos.
Oh, yes. They're very clean, just very vibrant orange meat.
So here's the thing, too, that you got to think about when you're catching them in the spawn or when they hit river. So when they go in the river, they change, right? They get darker, steelhead get colored up like a rainbow. So their meat quality isn't the best when they go in the river either. Unless you catch a fresh one that just shot the river and is still chrome, that flesh is going to be like a bright pink when they're out in the big lake, or they're still chrome yet.
Mm-hmm.
But once they start coloring up, that I've seen salmon when I flay them in out of the river, they're like white, and the meat is not as firm either. It's more mushy. Still eats the same. I mean, it might be a little mushy when you cook it.
You can smoke it. River fish, especially a salmon fall time fish. If I'm catching those, they're going typically on the smoker.
Yeah. That's why I prefer on the piers. You know, the meat is a lot, meat quality is better.
Yeah.
Well, I can get behind that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Some high quality meat, baby.
Sure. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So, another question I have that's keen on mind, like, I like giving guys options if they haven't done anything before, and like budget friendly, you know, or kind of ballpark ideas. Because when I got this bass boat this spring, I'm like, man, I got a pretty good investment in the boat. Granted, it was 86, so I didn't spend a lot of money on it. But yeah. I'm like, man, I got to buy some poles maybe. Like, what do I need to do? And just used all my Cabela's gift cards I had stockpiled for a few years and went to Cabela's, and kind of my brother-in-law went with me and he kind of gave me some pointers. And, you know, there's a wide variety of stuff, right? And I feel like, I think I want to say for a couple $100, we got quite a bit of stuff. And it has worked great all summer. Like, every time I went fishing with the family, I don't feel like I need to go buy more. So, like, super affordable in that aspect, other than the boat purchase, right?
Yeah.
Which, granted, I could have, you guys go crazy on boats just like they go crazy on anything, but you know, you can do the John boat if you wanted. So, like, very affordable. Now, when you're, you know, targeting these bigger fish on the pier, what are some costs? Like, what's like maybe like an average price per pole guys should look into? And like, is like three poles enough, or is one pole enough? Like, maybe some pointers in that regard.
I'd say, because like in Michigan, the limit of poles to have is three. So you definitely have three poles, right? So personally, I've been using kind of the cheapo setup for as long as I have, and they've lasted longer than some of the better stuff I've gotten. So I don't even know if they still make them anymore, but they're just Shakespeare steelhead salmon series. And they're like 10'6". Some are nine, I have 9-footers. They've held out for years. I mean, since I was in high school, middle school, and they're still rocking. I mean, I'm chucking 4-ounce pyramid sinkers with those, and they're not even made for it, and they haven't broke yet. So, you really don't got to get too expensive, I don't think. I mean, you see some guys out there with Lamaglass stuff and, you know, St. Croix, you know, specifically made pier rods, but you really don't need that to start out, I don't think.
I was going to say, I take one of each style rod I have.
Yeah.
So I have like a pier fishing rod that's like a 10-footer with a regular spinner on there. And then I have like my jigging rod, and then like the bass fishing rod. It's like a freaking, I think it's a 5-6 medium. I caught chrome on that at least 4 times this summer.
Oh, that was fun, I bet.
Oh, it's a great time.
I was going to say too, like when I started out, I only had enough money for one steelhead rod. And the other two are just my bass rods from when I was a kid. I had like what Brad is saying, a 5-footer and like a 6-footer. And those things would just get corked over, and they're not breaking. They're a bass rod.
Yeah, ugly stick, baby.
Yeah,
that's what I got.
I mean that to say, you're pretty standard guy that's going to try to go fishing. The rod you have will probably be sufficient.
Yep.
But, and then, so that means you can probably go to any store and get one for less, you know, $100 or less. Yeah, sure. Yep. You can easily spend $500 on each setup if you wanted to, but that's like your affordable kind of aspect you were talking about. I think if you want to just go get, you really only need to buy, you need to get preferably a 4-0 leader that you can tie on, but if any line will probably do.
Yeah, you could just do straight mono and you'd be all right.
Yeah, your pyramid sinkers, barrel swivels and hooks and a bobber. I mean, it's really not expensive.
No, I mean, and that's what I love about it.
Even like sometimes in like salmon spawn season, I'll go out with just a bass rod and a spoon.
Yeah,
I'll have just my bass line on there and I'll catch salmon with a spoon and a, you know, 7-foot bass rod. And that's fun. That's probably my favorite. Just going out with one rod and seeing what you can do with a spoon.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of what when I went with my buddy a few weeks ago on the boat and he showed me spots, I'm like, dude, this is like bass fishing, but a lot bigger fish. Like a lot bigger. And like that, I enjoy targeting bass. Like, that's fun. You never know what cast you're gonna get one, and when they hit, baby, you know. And then there's the whole challenge of getting them through trees and you know what I mean, like all that stuff. The river just got a bunch of crap in there, and I'm like, okay, it's not a guarantee when that fish is on. When you hook that fish, it is not a guarantee.
Because a lot of times too, when we're in the river, you know, if we're in the winter time fishing for steelhead or fall for salmon, a lot of times you're looking for those big brush piles or down trees too. They're just hanging out under there.
I got the only steelhead I've ever mounted was actually caught under a tree in the White River, and they had chainsaws on it as I hooked up to pull it out of the river.
What?
So, that was awesome. I caught the last fish under that that tree jam.
Yep, because they were like, get this thing out of here.
And yeah, it was on a campground, and they were sick of looking at it. So they had a company, and they were pulling up, and they had the chainsaws running, and I bobbered down right there. And that fish broke a net, ran off three times after we tried to net it, and we still hooked it. And it was an awesome double strike, and I freaking had to mount that one.
You learned your lesson from not doing one before.
Well, unfortunately, no, I mounted that one first, and then taxidermist didn't really do it justice. So then I had a bad taste in my mouth, and he told me to mount the one that was significantly bigger and potentially more beautiful. And I was like, we're good. I got pictures.
Yeah, pictures. Which, I mean, you can – I mean, I did some Facebook or Instagram stalking. You guys got some sweet pics of your fish. I always like that, too, seeing those. Oh, it's like, man, they're so pretty.
They really are, man.
Yeah. That's chrome is gold, baby. That's someone's tag. Right, over baby. There. Yeah, that's a sweet tag right there. Sweet name right there. Chrome is gold. Love it.
That's OG.
Yeah, it is. Heck yeah. So what's the next, like, what's the outlook look like for the rest of the summer? I mean, we are, let's see, it's August 26th right now when we're recording this. What does it look like? Are you guys going to go hard until October 1st? Or
what's the plan here? I think I'd be excited for this coming up week when we get that cool weather. Get some rain at the start of the weekend. It'd help push some things up, I think. I think the next couple of weeks will be good for salmon fishing for sure.
I was going to say, we're probably, unless there's a good flip or something, my focus on fishing will be for kings as they're starting to push in. I got a smaller boat, so I can troll them a little easier when it's sub 100 feet of water. I don't know, I guess not easier, it's no different, it's just I feel safer.
Yeah, get wrecked.
Yeah,
that's cool. So that's kind of, you kind of just bide your time, wait for the right conditions, and the strike.
Yeah,
strike when it's hot.
Nice.
Davey's a lot better at maneuvering the river stuff, especially in this earlier time frame. Like, I grew up, my whole life's been big lake style, and Davey kind of, his whole avenue has been, he grew up more around the green water, I guess you would call
boatless
it.
Angler.
Yeah. But he's learned a lot of really cool things, and he's basically taught me most of what I know. Derek, a decent amount too.
Derek's
about definitely. The pier fishing, and like other buddies too. Like, I don't want to leave anybody out now, but
like, they know who they are.
Yeah, they know. This is
they
like,
know who they are.
Right. I've learned a lot from those guys, coming from mainly being on a boat to some of this more land kind of stuff.
Sweet. Do you ever have any interest in fly fishing at all?
So I bought a fly rod. I was hoping to use it on the boat. Just kind of get back. So I used to catch a lot of bluegills as a kid with a fly rod. And didn't quite happen because I always had a lot of people on the boat, and, you know, little man's right by me, and he's, you know, teaching him. So I haven't done it yet, but I do like that idea of doing that, like floating something down this huge, you know, this huge area, and you're just like, please bite this stupid little fly. And but I do have one. I do have waders from duck hunting, so I think I have a couple things. I just haven't quite made the time to go do it yet.
I think too, if you ever go out in the winter or early spring, like February, March, hit those small, like the smaller rivers with a fly rod, with a streamer, you probably have some fun.
Yeah, I mean, I live close by to a lot of good spots, right? I mean, I'm in the Grand Rapids area, essentially, and you look on the map, it's like, well, there's water, there's water, there's water. I see guys fishing all the time. It's like, I have lots of opportunities really close. It's that time management that I talk about with whitetails too, right? I think it's one of these things that I got to, like, okay, like, I'm checking these boxes, right, for the whitetail and the rabbit hunting and that. It's like, okay, now I just got to coordinate this and then, you know, learn from it, and I got to kind of pick my battles. We're busy, but yeah. It might be one of those things where it's like, hey, like, maybe I take a day off of rabbit hunting to go, you know, take the buddies out, or have tag along with someone and be like, show me your ways. I'll just take pictures. I don't really care. I'm just so infatuated with learning stuff, you know?
Yeah, I think we both are.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, every time, and just like hunting and everything else, there's something to be learned every time you hit it. It's like, it's probably as much of the fun as it is actually succeeding. And because I almost feel like once you figure it all out, you don't have that same drive. You know, like, I feel like right now it's almost to, like, prove yourself wrong. Like, oh, it's not going to be good. Well, go make it good. Like, figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's still fascinating to me that I walk up to a brush pile and I'll kick it and a rabbit pops out. And it's like, I've done that 30 times this morning. Right. And nothing's happened. Same thing when you pick that tree in the middle of the woods, or you know, that morning, you wake up and everything goes smoothly and you're like, yep, it's going to happen. That happens 20 times and never happens in the morning, that you're fumbling around making as loud noise as you can. And then you see all the deer in the woods, or shoot your buck or whatever, fill a tag. That's why it's like, so just, it's such like a fun thing that it's not instantly satisfying, which, you know, my kid is, I'm trying to raise my kid in a way that he doesn't get what he wants all the time. Like, he can literally be like, I'm feel like watching this today. Boop, pop on YouTube, search whatever he wants, and boom, he's filled with so much stuff instantly what he would like to do. Or I want to learn something, and he can just go and search it, and boom, it pops up right in front of us. Like, man, dude, I want you to kind of struggle a little bit here.
Yeah.
Enjoy the struggle, right? And I think maybe kind of a thing for parents. I mean, Legos have been a really good thing for my little guy, like giving him Legos. And obviously the first few times we got him, he was young, it sucked because I was the one putting the Legos together. But now he's getting a little older. He's kind of enjoying the process of, oh, I'm going to create something. He just brought something. He made something yesterday and brought it to me. And he's like, look at this thing I made. I'm just like, dude, that thing looks like a mumble jumble, but good for you, man. You know, but he put in effort and got something out of it. And I think that's why we love the outdoors. Oh, put some effort in and get rewarded with that feeling of meat missile, baby. Ripping across and your buddies. And it's kind of hard to explain unless you've been through it. Right.
Right. Cause I was out on the pier and I was sitting like in a little ice cave frozen. I'm like, I've been out here since dawn, you know, and I'm just sitting there half asleep and I see some poles going off. I'm like, holy crap. I'm instantly warm, like sitting there freezing the whole time. Nothing more satisfying than pulling a couple chrome out.
Gosh, I'm gonna have to do this one of these days. Everyone have these conversations. I'm like, I feel it. You feel the passion. You just feel it. And it's got to be worth something. And, you know, easy to take the kid with me too. Like, I'm all about that. Easy to take the wife or whatever, enjoy as a family. Some guys may have a little different opinion. Oh, I go, you know, I do that to have, you know, get away. Well, that's about whitetails for me. Like, I get plenty of time to sit in a tree by myself during that. So, like, I enjoy doing all these other things with friends or family, and I'm proponent to that. But some guys, you know, I get it. If you're like, man, I just want to be in the river by myself, I get it, because it is beautiful. Like, I hunt by a lot of rivers, and when you walk out in the morning after you've had a nice sit, you might be a little cold and it's still, you know, maybe a little crisp out. Something about those leaves, the contrast, the river, and it's awesome.
That is.
All right. Yeah. So what's the whitetail outlook for you two? I know it's hard for me not to talk about whitetails, but man, dude, we're like almost a month away. And I am like itching to go sit in a tree. So what's, are you guys hit it hard October 1st, or where are you guys standing with that?
Every day, all day, as much as I can.
Yeah, that is the answer right there.
My wife calls me Uncle Brad through October, November. We had our daughter last year, and she's like, here's Uncle Brad. It's like,
oh, God.
Saturday at noon, I haven't seen anybody for like the whole week.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, maybe for now it's awesome. It's good to laugh about, right?
She's obviously young enough to make it not so much as a importance as sounds like you have older kids now. So
yep.
Things and there's real feelings and having to be involved in things like that. You'll know.
I agree. I mean, I still went on a lot of out of state trips when my little man was a baby or Tyler, and dude, he didn't know if I was gone for 10 minutes or if I was gone for 10 days, right? He just like, oh, hey, like, wah, you know, crying when I leave, crying when I get back, kind of a thing. So I can relate.
Same kind of concept. I got an opportunity to go out to Colorado this year and go elk hunting for a couple weeks. So I don't know how many more years I got a couple week trips without too much headache, which she's a great sport. I'm not talking any trash on. She's very supportive of all this for me and all that stuff too. So, but I think the timing's right for that kind of thing. But
oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, go do it. Like, I would say the time can be right almost any time as long as you do your part, right? Like, right. If you prepare correctly, if you take care of the things you need to take care of, there's going to be struggle. It's going to suck. Like, obviously, it's not your wife would rather have you home. But if you do your part, I think you can manage that. That's why a lot of guys I know just like, I'm not doing it. It's not worth the hassle. Like, what does that mean? You're not willing to, like, maybe stay up a little later sometimes or wake up earlier sometimes to take care of some business. So then when it is time to go do that, things are in order? Like, or what do you mean it's not worth it? Like, I always, like, to me, it's worth it. Like, I'll put in the time and the effort to make it worth it.
I got buddies that, like, they'll do 3 golf trips in the summer. And then in the fall, they're like, I don't got time for that, dude. And I'm like, I know, because I know, bud.
Like, you burned it, man. You burned your time.
And that's cool. I mean, I'm not talking. I mean, I am kind of talking trash about golf, but it's all good.
I mean, dude, no matter how good, how many times they golf, they're never going to be that good. So who cares, right?
No, I agree.
No, I do love golf, and it's a good change of pace. But guess what? If I've only golfed, I think, 3 times this year. And I'm just as happy as I was years I've golfed 4 times that much. So, it just is what it is.
But no doubt.
Are you pretty excited for this elk hunt? I mean, have you elk hunted much before or what?
No, it's the first time.
Ooh.
But, I got a newer friend, and his neighbor used to live out there. And they've, like I said, the timing's right. So it's kind of like they've both shot bulls in the area. They've got experience. And I would consider myself a bow hunter, but I don't. This is the rifle hunt. I think it's a great way to get introduced to this. It's something I've always wanted to do. It's just never. It's a combination of ignorance and other things. Just like I don't know where to look, how to look, where to start, and so I recently kind of started looking, and this kind of came together. So, Sweet. Yeah, I'm pretty amped.
Are you in really good shape right now, or what's that look like?
Good enough, probably. I don't, that's the kind we talked about last week on the podcast. It's like,
okay,
the guy I'm going with is about to run a double marathon. Can I do that? No.
Yep.
I'm doing a lot of, like, more, I'm just getting ready for the terrain. Like, I'll do a lot of rocks, like 40-pound packs. Like, we got hills and stairs and stuff around where we live, and I'll do a lot of that. No, I'm not in spectacular shape, I guess, to answer that. But
it's different, man. The mountains are different.
It's like, it's what it is. I mean, I like Kentucky last year. Yeah, it's a lot mental. I feel like a lot of that. I mean, that's a very hilly, hard place to hunt. And we did that in September last year. And I would say I feel like I'm in better shape than that. So, I mean, that's fair. He said, as long as, like, your lungs can handle the altitude, which is going to just be how it's going to be, that's just your body, I guess. He said some of it's, you can prepare as much as you want, but it's just a whole different world than what we're used to.
Yeah, I'd piggyback off that. When I went my spring bear hunt last year, I was, like, in okay shape. Like, I mean, I do construction, so, like, I walk a lot already every day. My average steps a day is crazy, like the amount of miles I walk in a year doing that. Yeah. With a, you know, weighted tool rig on, and, like, you know, I didn't do much running. We were told, hey, you got horses, like, you don't really have to be in great shape, it's totally fine. Get there, and it was like, oh boy, like, I went through like the ringer with, like, altitude and all that stuff. But after, like, you know, 3 days of being in the mountains, it was way easier. Like, just being there and being, like, used to it. I mean, your legs are going to burn no matter what, but it just comes down to, like, if your body can handle it, then mentally you can just keep going, right? And, you know, be smart about it. But I was talking to the guys there, and I was like, what? He's like, dude, you would be surprised at how, like, some guys you would think they're going to just crush it out here, and they just get just broken, like, and they just can't, they give up. And the other guys are like, this dude doesn't stand a chance, and he just trucks the whole hunt, you know? So fortunately for you, sound pretty mentally strong, so you'll be good.
Yeah, confidence is key, I guess, but, like, yeah, we'll make it happen.
If you know anything about Brad too, he's gonna be fired up the whole time, so that's gonna drive him through it.
Yeah. Heck yeah, the hype man. Let's go.
Yeah, that's pretty much it too.
I'm the same way, dude. We're here for one reason, that is to kill something, so let's freaking go.
Let's go.
How about you, David? You got any big plans? Are you hunting in Michigan, or you got any out-of-state stuff going on, or what?
I got no out-of-state stuff. I like to go up north for, you know, upper, lower peninsula. I got 2 weeks planned there. Not 2 weeks, but like two long weekends. So like 4 or 5 days each time. I'm pretty much part-time all throughout October. I think I got 3 weeks back-to-back off. I save all my vacation for this time of year in October, November. So pretty much just staying in Michigan, just going, staying south and going north a few times. Gonna hit that last week of bow before rifle up north. So we're hoping we tag out before rifle, but I'm kind of excited for the deer camp aspect of the 15th on Friday. I think it's on Friday this year.
Yeah, I think it's Friday this year. That's sweet. Yeah.
I'm happy for everybody else except me because I'll be in. Okay, this sounds bad still, but I'll be in Colorado. But family deer camp is when it's the 15th on a Friday. We get an extra day of like full deer camp time, and that I do enjoy that very much. So. I'll try to shift it to that Thanksgiving weekend. So, but either way,
that's what like my family, like when we have our gun, you know, gun season, I don't miss opening day of gun with the family up north, but like my siblings and, you know, that's a little easier for them to get multiple days off. And Thanksgiving time is when we're all hunting, we're all together. Like that's the most people that are going at one time. And a lot of does die, around Thanksgiving. It's great. I do a lot of gun and a lot of skinning, but you know what? I do it with a smile on my face, so it's a good time.
It's all part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other guys are going to Illinois, the other three dudes on our group.
Sweet.
So we'll see what they drag out of Illinois.
Yeah, hopefully. I know Derek walked a lot of miles in there. He went like mid-shed season for a scouting trip with a couple of buddies, too, to that piece. They found like three or four sheds, and they said it's a lot like Missouri, which is probably what we had the most experience with.
Yeah,
a lot of that, you know, you like river bottom, creek bottom, pinch points and funnels and stuff like that. So,
yeah, they lay out very. I've been to both states. There are definitely parts that are very similar, except where I went last year. I went to like Southern Illinois, and that was good. It was fun, but I was playing catch up until about day three, and then I was like, okay, I'm starting to get this, and now I just got an itch to go back. Not this year, I don't think, but I'll be back in the hills of Illinois one of these days, because it was pretty in its own way and challenging in its own way. But yeah, dude, I love doing those kind of little mini adventures, just learning new stuff.
I guess the first time we went out of state was 3 years ago, and I love Michigan. Like, we were talking about this the other day. Like, I wouldn't trade my heritage and the places I hunt here is bread and butter, but damn it, is it cool seeing some of that stuff out there. It's some of the, you know, dry creek bottoms and just crazy big terrain that we don't see necessarily all the time. I hunted up in Frankfort for a while with a couple buddies. Big hills, but it's not rocky shelves and Magnum bucks, like
there's not these like big drainages that you get down to the bottom of, and it's like, holy moly, there, how do they rub a tree that big? Is there elk here? I don't think so.
We went to Iowa for shed season, and that was cool.
Jurassic Park in Iowa, man.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, sweet. Well, hey, I appreciate you guys hopping on tonight. Not trying to cut this off too early, but I got a couple business things to do yet tonight. But I think we'll be having some more conversations here in the future. So,
heck yeah, man. I had a great time. Appreciate it.
Yeah, dude. Awesome. The good stuff. I did learn a lot. I know I try to absorb as much as I can. And then what I'll do is I'll re-listen to a lot of these podcasts that talk about some of these things and just try to like, I try really hard to just like soak stuff in and like be open-minded with it. So then when I'm in a position, I'm like, oh, hey, he said to use a bobber with a spawn here and drift it through this part. Or if I'm on, find myself doing something in the winter time where it's like, man, it sucks, I don't want to go rab on today, but maybe I can take the fly rod out. So I try to do all those things. And it just kind of like reminds me of how I learned how to be the whitetail hunter. And today is like the same concept, right? Just absorb, learn, trial and error. And like we talked about earlier, when that you catch that buck sneaking back to his binary at about 9:30 in November, you're like, oh my gosh, it works! Like, this is awesome.
Heck yeah.
Oh shoot. You guys got any closing things? I'm trying to think of something off the top of my head. Oh, I did this with this week's episode too. Maybe shout out a couple of YouTube channels that you like. From maybe it can be an educational standpoint, or it can be like just good high quality content.
Okay.
I'm gonna use this as a plug station for my buddy actually. I think his videos are awesome, by the way. It's called the Rewa Report. And he does a lot of deer hunting, but it's a lot of habitat. And he did a public land drive video that was really cool. He actually went pier fishing with us too, and that's a video on there. And I thought that turned out pretty cool too.
Yeah,
what's it called? The Rewa.
The Rewa Report. REWA is Rewa.
Yep. So this is a selfish reason because I always like watching new YouTube stuff. So
no, absolutely. I think he does a great job. He puts a lot of time and effort into it, and I enjoy watching those.
Sweet. All right, David, what you got?
Let's see. I guess the classic Hunting Beast.
I was gonna say that.
That's all you watch. Dude, that's good stuff, dude. He's
come over and watched my daughter with me in the morning, and we watched the Hunting Beast pretty much the whole morning. So she probably already knows who Dan Infault is and that he's a killer. So.
Good. I guess to piggyback off that, you ever watched the Latitude Grit series? I think that's really well produced. Good enough.
Oh, dude.
Very good.
You'll be in for a treat here in a little bit. I had a podcast I did. I'm trying to think of the schedule here. It actually will be launching before this one, so you'll be able to listen to it. I got someone on that's pretty involved in that whole thing, so it'll be a good episode. Awesome. Well, I guess at this point in time, who matters? Everyone heard it. It was Aaron Blasey. Talk about the grit. Yeah, dude. Sweet. I talked about a little bit of stuff off air with that guy, and I met him a couple of times, and I'm pumped for this upcoming episode or upcoming series of the grit, dude. It sounds fantastic.
Yeah. That's awesome, man.
So you got any fishing? You got any fishing YouTube at all, David?
Oh man,
there's so much on YouTube, dude, about this, especially this kind of fishing. He's a lot more YouTube than me, but I couldn't think of a name. Honestly, I've seen so many.
Yeah, so you can find a lot of stuff about pier fishing. Michigan on YouTube.
And other peers too. I mean, just stuff that I never even thought of.
Oh, what's that guy in Wisconsin?
That's who I was just trying to think of.
Eric. His name's Eric, then his last name's weird. It's like Hadaja, something like that.
Okay.
He's out of Milwaukee, but he does some really cool trout, salmon, bobber fishing.
That's a whole another rabbit hole that side of the lake. It's like
it's totally different.
It's crazy.
Big browns. Catching browns out of the ice. I'd say that's probably one of my favorite fishing
channels. Well, when you, after we get a record and you figure out who that is, send it to me and I'll show note it, or I'll talk about it in the intro for this episode.
For sure.
So sweet. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up, boys.
Awesome.
Thank you.
No problem. We'll try to get better lighting next time.
Yeah, you guys kind of disappeared on me a little bit there, but yeah. You know, I'm sure the sunset was cool.
Yeah, we didn't see that either.
Oh, you were on the right side of the house? Come on.
No.
Let's pre-plan this better. Well, all right. Well, hey, I appreciate you guys being on here. Everyone else who's listened to this show, appreciate you guys. We wouldn't be able to do what we do without you. So go give their podcast a follow. Check out some of their content. You know, like and share all their Instagram posts or all that kind of stuff, because we appreciate that. We're just some dudes that like to get out there, and all the support, and that helps us get our word out there and maybe open some doors for other things for you guys. So appreciate you listening, and don't forget to get out there.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.